I'm here today with Francisco Loaiza. Thanks for joining me, Francisco.
Thank you for having me.
And I want you all to know that Francisco just became Scoutmaster of the Year.
Yes, I demand a recount. I don't know what happened.
No, that was really good. So we're all talking about survival and what to do, but here's a guy who's actually out there regularly with the young boys, training them, so they become outstanding members of society. They learn basic skills. So this is part of our solution. So I want to congratulate you on your accomplishment.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a great honor.
And today we're going to talk about some of the catastrophes that some people are frightened about. There's a new book out called Mega Catastrophes, 9 Strange Ways the World Could End. And this was written by...
Was it David Darling or is it Schultz Muck?
Both of them. There's two fellows who wrote the book. And it actually hasn't been published yet as far as I know, but I've heard them on the radio. And you know, one of the things that comes to mind when I hear these major scenarios, we're going to go over them one by one and then talk about practical advice, things that we think would be more likely to be concerned about and ways to actually prepare. But I'm not a good Bible quoter. When I want to know a passage in the Bible, I grab a Jehovah's Witness and I ask them. But there is a phrase that says, there is no fear in love. What's that phrase? Do you know that one?
It's in 1 John, perfect love casts out all fear.
Perfect love casts out all fear. Yeah. Now, I think people should really think of some of these phrases as science technologies. We all know what fear is, but do we really know what love is? Too many people are driven by fear these days, and I'm telling you, they fill up the seminars and books are being published because of the fear mongers are alive and well today in 2012 for everything from, like these 9 ways the world could end.
Yep.
So, I think it's really important. Like, this is a true act of love for you to volunteer your time and work with the scouts and help them think clearly and act clearly in a crazy world. So I think that's very admirable. So these authors give 9 possibilities of how the world could end. They rate them on a probability scale of 0 to 10, 0 being 0 probability and the loss of human life 0, so that's irrelevant.
Right.
The 1 probability is it's a loss of human life of 10 million or more. But you get into the rating of 4 with a moderate mega catastrophe, loss of human life 10 million or more.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, and then rating 8, loss of human life 1 billion or more. And the rating 9 and 10, well, 9, it says there's a high probability that it will happen, and it would result, if this ever happened, total extinction. The rating of 10, they say, is a for certain possibility. I don't think anything makes their scale of 10, and it would cause total extinction. So their first one is an ice age that they address. So I'd have to say that when you think about possible scenarios, we talked about an ice age back in the 70s, and that would probably not be a quick catastrophe. It would probably happen more slowly, where in the Northeast, maybe the winters, the snow would extend into the summers. So there would be some chance to survive and deal with this. They give it a scale of 2, so it's a low probability. Mm-hmm. Did you ever think about ice ages?
No, but I remember when the global warming ideas, first people started talking about it and noticing it, some naysayers would say, well, wait a minute. 20, 30 years ago, people were talking about Ice Age. And I even saw some old magazines, Time magazine, that talked about Ice Age, the front cover, you know?
I clipped and saved a lot of that.
Maybe you showed me one of them, yeah.
So that hasn't happened anyway. That doesn't mean it couldn't, but even these authors give it a low probability.
Right.
Then number 2 on their scale is a scale of 3 they give it, which is still a low probability, a supernova explosion.
Wow.
So there have been those happening. They haven't affected Earth that we know of, but it's a massive star that explodes and it becomes a black hole, or when 2 neutron stars collide. And they go into all of this in the book. It has to be within reach of our planet, within reasonable reach. So, you know, that's if that happened, it could destroy all life quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so none of your MREs in your garage, Francisco, would really matter, right?
They wouldn't matter. If you're dead, you're gone. That's it.
Yeah, okay.
There's no U-Haul trucks that take things with,
right.
You know, in funerals.
So then the next one that they talk about on a scale of three, and this was in the news recently, is like a Large Hadron Collider making a mistake. That's that the physicists have that big device in mm-hmm. Switzerland. It's a 17-mile loop. They smash particles to study the subatomic particles. And when it was in the news before the Large Hadron Collider went online, there was some talk that it could cause a black hole and it'll extinguish all life. And even Stephen Hawking got into the act saying, probably won't happen.
Mm.
You know, this is one of those things that would be unknown territory where we do play with nature.
Right.
So it isn't something that I occupy my mind with. It's in the back, very, very back of my mind. Do you ever think about the collider and what it might do to life on Earth?
No, but I know that they use it uses a lot. I want to say millions of watts.
It uses a lot.
A lot of energy to try to dislodge atoms and try to break atomic bonds between protons and neutrons, I think.
And this is just a little sub note, but I'm sure you know what particle they're looking for in this search, right?
I've never been really good in chemistry.
The Higgs boson.
Oh, okay.
The elusive Higgs boson, which they think exists, but they're not sure it exists.
Did not know that.
Sometimes known as the God particle. That's just a little side note. It's irrelevant for really our discussion today.
That's good. I learned something new.
Okay. Then there's the possibility of super volcanoes. And most of the time, even the authors admit that would be a local problem. We know that there are cities that have been covered in volcanic ash, and everybody had to leave in a hurry.
Mount Pinatubo.
Yeah.
More recently, yeah.
And Vesuvius.
Mm-hmm.
So there were historical towns that were pretty much wiped out, and even if you had a bomb shelter to go into, there was no oxygen, and you died. So these are things. This is a possibility. Again, do we have any active volcanoes anywhere near where we are here in Southern California?
Ooh, I don't know.
Up north there are, but down
Washington,
here?
There definitely is. The state of Washington. Hawaii has active volcanoes.
Right. Okay, so it's probably not. It comes on these authors' lists as one of the big things to be concerned about.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I mean, Yellowstone, this is talking about Yellowstone supervolcano.
Mm-hmm.
I guess at one time it wiped out most of the mammals.
Right. So. Well, then our next one is an asteroid impact. And they do point out accurately that the Earth has been struck numerous times in the past by various comets and asteroids.
Oh, yeah.
And they can be a few meters to tens of kilometers across. So a big one probably did in the dinosaurs. So, I don't know if you watch the news. I think that you have a television and electricity at your home, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I have electricity, yes.
And you have a television set, right?
I do have a TV, yeah.
Okay, so every now and then you hear about a comet or an asteroid that came within half the distance of the moon to the Earth. And usually they can predict if it's going to hit us or not. So, even though there are people who watch such things in space, this actually could happen at any given time.
But some of them are smaller. I know that one, there's that crater, Arizona. There's a big crater in Arizona.
It's a very big crater.
Yeah, and that was relatively small.
But let's say that crater was where Phoenix is.
That
so
would be bad.
You have the big impact hole, you have the vibration, and you have the dust, and maybe a fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it would affect a relatively large, although local area.
Right.
So let's say you lived in Phoenix and something hit.
That'd be bad.
Would your bug out kit be of any use?
No, not at all.
Unless you survived and you're on the fringes.
Fortunately, there's people that watch asteroids, and if they are getting close to Earth, they do warn people.
And the reality is, if one is going to hit us, what was that movie? They sent the Bruce Willis and these guys, and they tried to blow it up. But see, we don't have that technology.
Impact? I don't remember the name of it.
Yeah, but if something is going to hit us, we're going to get hit. And if you're on the fringes and survive, then yes, your preparations that you've made will come in handy.
Yep.
So then the authors of the book also list the machine takeover. And, you know, Ray Bradbury did some stories about that, about how things that continue, about how the technology that surrounds us we don't understand. I kind of put this at a very low level of importance. What about you?
Yeah, it's movie stuff. I don't know. The artificial intelligence isn't ready to take over.
It's possible that it could in the future, but so both of us discount that one.
Right.
Again, they're looking at major catastrophes here in this book that we're reviewing. Well, we're not really reviewing the book. We're just kind of covering it for your information. Then one of their next concerns was nanotechnology, but really by that they mean all of the genetic engineering with crops, animals, blending species, you know.
Right.
I have to say I'm concerned about that. Mm-hmm. I don't really see it as a major end of the world scenario, but it is something that more and more people are being concerned about, specifically as it affects your health and your food.
Yeah, corn. Corn has been genetically altered many, many times.
Yeah.
And other plants too, to make it more hardy, to make it pest resistant.
So you can spray pesticides or herbicides in the fields, and it doesn't affect the thing that you're growing. So there are reasons for all of these technologies, but one of the reasons is usually not increasing the nutritional content of the food that you're eating.
It's all about profit.
So this is a hard one to consider. However, the authors of the book give it a 5, which means it has the probability, if something bad happened, of causing the loss of 1 billion people. So this again is the mega catastrophes, 9 strange ways the world could end. So I think there's something to that. Unfortunately, as I've said before, modern farming, even though everybody wants organic these days, modern farming is probably one of the greatest ecological threats to the world. I work at farmers markets, I support farmers, but the big massive farming where you're cutting down rainforests in Central America and South America, this is causing ecological concern. And so I don't know how close we are to all of this being a catastrophe. We'd have to look into it some more, but it's one of the, unfortunately, this is one of those things we don't really see.
Yeah.
And you may not even be aware of anything happening until it's too late.
You know, one thing that this kind of brings to mind is the genetic alterings of animals, and even what we feed cows, what we feed pigs, or even chickens. You know, we give them all these hormones. And recently, like a week ago, they found a case of mad cow disease up north. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did.
That kind of concerns me. Now, it was a dairy cow. It wasn't a beef cow.
Right.
But that still concerns me.
Yeah.
This was something a couple of years ago that happened, in England? Or in another country? Now it's
here. Mad cow was mostly overseas because they were feeding the carcasses back to the cows. And it caused a certain brain condition, which was somehow linked to Alzheimer's. Not exactly. So, you know, folks, I have had nutritionists on, and we've talked. I'm going to have another nutritionist on soon. I think this is an area of major concern. It should be of major concern to everybody. Why do we use the farming methods we use? Because it's cheap and efficient.
Yeah.
We could grow large volumes of food more efficiently, and even with the animals, it plumps them up and it makes them fatter. So if you're looking at things strictly from an economic point of view, it makes absolute sense. Once your family members get cancer, though, and you get sicknesses, and you're wondering what's going on, diet is something that we can control, and you do want to gain some control. So we always encourage people to grow gardens. If you can raise chickens, raise chickens. If you can take some control of this and then use your economic power when you're buying, you can influence the way things are done to some degree. I would go so far, we know that certain things are harmful. Even though there's a few, somebody who runs the chemical company might say, oh, that's never been proven to cause cancer. Okay.
Like saccharin?
Well, I'm not thinking of saccharin. I'm thinking of some of the more powerful chemicals that go in the farms.
Okay.
But here's another issue to be concerned about. You know, we say you are what you eat. You are what you think.
Mm-hmm.
You go into a restaurant, this is I don't even think of this in the realm of metaphysics. But you go into a restaurant and the cooks and all are arguing and fighting, mm-hmm. sometimes you probably don't want to eat that food, because those emotions that goes into that food is what you're eating. You actually are eating that stuff. There was a whole movie, was it the something to do with chocolate? Remember that movie?
Chocolat.
Was it called Chocolat?
Yeah, the lady made it out of love, out of her love.
And what was the point of that movie?
I don't know.
It had to do that...
It's very romantic.
Well, there was that element, but it had to do with the idea that how we prepare our food,
right.
how we treat it special, mm-hmm. does affect our soul, our body, everything, our environment and our atmosphere. I bring up my mother periodically, but they lived through the Depression on a farm in Ohio. It's a 51-acre farm. And if I ever put my boots on the table, my mother would... I think I'd get slapped a few times.
Well,
you don't put your food on the table. Your feet or your boots on the table.
Right.
Because to my mother's way of thinking, your food is like a miracle, and you regard it as being sacred. Mm. And the kitchen and the whole food, you don't waste food. I see people waste food like it's just another commodity. And, that's a whole another topic.
Yeah.
The whole idea of wasting food and why you should not do so. See, because I think that there's perfect justice in the world.
Hmm.
And that which we sow, we reap.
Yeah.
You waste food.
That's a Bible verse. Galatians.
It probably is.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah.
I've attributed certain things to the Bible that turns out weren't there, but that's good that somebody knows.
No, that's a Bible verse.
But in any event...
Can I mention something else about the food?
Please do.
Okay. Why is it that artificial sweeteners don't cause calories? Have you ever thought about that?
Artificial sweeteners don't cause calories because they have no calories.
Well, why is that? Well, this is the reason.
Why?
A chemist told me.
Okay.
When they take something like Splenda or aspartame or whatever the brand it is, okay, they call it an alcohol sugar, okay, whatever they call it, this is what they're doing. They're taking the molecular structure of sugar and they're changing it just like that, just a little bit. So when it goes into your body doesn't know how to digest it. Your tongue tastes it. You could still taste it because the molecular structure is just close enough to trick your tongue. But some people can distinguish artificial sweeteners with their taste, with their palate. So the body doesn't know what to do with it. It doesn't digest it. It doesn't process it. So what does it do? Shoots it out the other end. Okay?
Is that all it does? I mean, are there harmful effects from some of these?
There probably are, but... Why would I want to put something in my body that my body doesn't recognize? See, that's what concerns me. So the whole push for this artificial sweeteners and they're quote-unquote natural, I don't know. I don't see them as natural because most of the foods that we eat, they have a purpose, you know. Now, there are some things that we eat that we can't digest, like some plant parts, right?
Well, probably like wood. That's why we don't eat
yeah.
them. We eat the fruit on the tree, not the wood.
Right. No, but I'm just saying, it just seems strange that I would be taking large amounts of this artificial sweetener that's been chemically changed just enough so your body doesn't digest it.
So that
seems a little scary. I mean, I'm a layman. I'm not a chemist.
We don't want to gain weight, but we want to have the privilege of the flavor.
Yeah.
So then we get all of the concepts.
What's the trade-off? Yeah.
That's right. There's a trade-off. We get all that comes with it, whether we know it or not.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm a strong believer in that great philosopher named Pogo. Remember what Pogo's famous quote was?
No, I don't. Is he a cartoon character?
That's right. We have met the enemy, and he is us.
Okay.
That's what Pogo would always say.
Philosopher. Okay.
So nanotechnology. Or biological concerns. I could see that as a possibility
uh-huh.
of seriously altering our health or our way of life. I'm not sure that it would wipe out all life on the planet like they're suggesting, but that's just me. I don't know.
It might create zombies. It might create.
Well, we already have zombies, don't we?
Really?
look in all the political offices in the country.
Oh, okay.
I shouldn't say that because there are some good leaders.
Yeah, couple.
Okay, then. Another one that these authors list as a way that life might be wiped out, and they gave it a scale of 6. And a scale of 6 means the probability, the loss of human life could be total extinction, alien invasion.
Oh, and like from Mexico?
Not from Mexico, from outer space.
Because there are aliens here. My parents were aliens.
That is not what we're talking about. We're not talking about other life forms from another planet. So some people say that they're here already. They've already colonized Earth.
Really?
But okay, so
Men in Black. That's from a movie.
Something like that. But honestly, this is not something we spend much time thinking about, is it?
Right. No. I don't.
So they give it a scale of 6 because if there's an unknown civilization that comes here for some odd reason. They might have a superior technology. They might wipe us out, but I don't put much.
There was a movie about that, though. I'm not sure if it was a documentary, if it was fantasy.
War of the Worlds. I mean, there's
Thor.
Thor?
Have you seen that?
No.
That's a good movie. Yeah.
There probably have been dozens of movies with this kind of theme, but it's still pretty much the realm of science fiction. So, and the last one that they mentioned, there are 9 ways that everything could be done away with, is pandemics. Hmm. And I'd have to say, if I had to pick one scenario that would cause widespread destruction, mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's ones that they've not mentioned, we'll talk about in a minute, but pandemics of any sort, and like bubonic plague,
yep.
Okay, that which has not gone. Flus kill millions of people every year.
Yep,
and,
that's right.
And, you know, many of the diseases of the past have been eliminated through not necessarily greater medical advances, but through hygiene, advances mm-hmm. in hygiene and cleanliness and running
washing
water,
your hands,
and the educational efforts. So I'm concerned about our world with the way food is transported, with the cavalier attitude in which parents are teaching their children these days of being clean and so forth. And so what drives a lot of these problems such as this one would be increased population. In some parts of the world, the population is just going through the roof. You have more and more people vying for a finite amount of resources, more or less. And pandemics or diseases seem like a very real possibility.
I remember talking to somebody, and I think it was based on an article that we read in a paper, that antimicrobial soap has actually contributed to some bacteria becoming more and more resistant.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I'll tell you the reason, from what I remember. You don't need you don't need antibacterial soap.
Oh.
Soap?
Yeah, but it's so popular.
Of course it's popular.
Just like Nutrisuit is popular.
Just
Splenda.
But see, soap cleans stuff off of our bodies.
Right. The good and the bad and the ugly.
It cleans almost everything off, but our body does need to have some so-called bad things internally and externally to help fight off some diseases. It's just like our body is designed, our digestive juices, the enzymes in our stomach and so forth. When we eat something, our body is designed to fight off certain toxins if the body's healthy.
Right.
If you're eating Diet Pepsi all the time or Diet Coke or drinking a lot of soft drinks, you're actually flushing a lot of these healthful flora out of your stomach and intestines, and you become less able to fight off your own diseases. Now, I hadn't thought about getting into this, but do you remember the story called the Vinegar of Four Thieves?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay, now I first heard about that through...
it's like an article that you wrote about on it.
Well, I did write several articles about it. It's been in Wilderness Way, but I don't think I've mentioned it on this show. But it first came to my attention through David James and the Forest Preservation Society. They did a little story, and I did some research, and it was fascinating. Mm. It turns out that during the Middle Ages, this was in France, there were these thieves that got arrested going into homes stealing things. Okay?
Okay.
This was a plague where half the population or so was killed off. Okay, but certain plagues, which are on fleas, which are on rats,
right,
which are spread when there's bad hygiene, they can spread quickly,
right.
and the dead are dying so quick there's no one to bury them.
Wow.
Okay, so but these four guys were going into houses, and you know they're dead. They're just
taking
what they want.
Right.
And they got arrested by the police, and they're up in front of the judge, and the judge is thinking about it. He says, "Well, how did you guys do this? How do you guys get in and out without getting the disease yourself?
Without getting infected? Okay.
And what do you think they said? Do you remember the story? This is definitely
low-tech. Didn't they wash the floors with something?
Not exactly.
Maybe not. Okay.
But you're on the right track.
Oh, okay.
They made a solution that was mostly vinegar. And I've always told people, use raw apple cider vinegar if you're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
They soaked garlic in there.
Okay.
They used rue, rosemary.
Okay.
I don't have the whole formula memorized, but rue is a pretty awesome herb.
I've never experienced rue before.
No, when you smell rue, it's unmistakable.
Strong?
It's unmistakable.
Stronger than rosemary, would you say?
Yeah, yeah. And most people don't like it.
Okay.
But there's like six or seven herbs that you included. But the main thing, when you study the chemistry
mm-hmm.
of these plants, the main things are the garlic, which is can stop certain infections, and the vinegar is incredibly powerful. There have been whole books written about I think Dr. Jarvis wrote a book on folk medicine, and he mentioned the qualities of garlic. So these thieves made this juice.
Garlic and vinegar, right?
Garlic and vinegar and six or seven other herbs.
Mm-hmm.
They would drink a little. They would wash with it. Then they'd dip it into a kerchief that they'd cover their face with when they went into the places.
Wow.
So the judge gave him a light sentence or whatever he did. You know, he let them off easy if they would share that formula so other people wouldn't get sick. So that's a low-tech technology for fighting diseases. And I know people scoff at the whole vampire thing. Oh, vampires, whatever. But garlic is a very underrated and very powerful herb. The more of these things that you know about, the more likely you can be prepared. There have been movies about the spread of viruses.
Mm-hmm.
One Dustin Hoffman was in.
Right.
I know there was
Outbreak.
Yeah. Yeah, there was two that came out about the same time a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed how rapidly a virus could spread, a plague or a virus could spread. Just think about all the people you meet in the average day.
A flesh-eating virus. A lady's in the news today.
Is that right?
She was in Georgia in a zip line, and her leg got cut as she was going on the zip line. And that night, they had to amputate her leg.
Really?
Because this virus, this flesh-eating virus, was basically overtaking her body, and she may die. She may not make it.
Interesting.
Even after they amputated the leg that was infected.
I want to read just a little bit from this one section about the pandemics. It says, bubonic plague, the Black Death, and the Spanish flu are vivid examples from history of how microbial agents can decimate populations.
Hmm.
But the consequences aren't limited to a high body count. When the death toll gets high enough, it can disrupt the very fabric of society. Obviously, that's what we're talking about. According to U.S. government studies, if a global pandemic affecting at least half the world's population were to strike today, health professionals wouldn't be able to cope with the vast numbers of sick and succumbing people. I don't even think it would have to be half.
Yeah.
Okay.
The result
of so many deaths would have serious implications for the infrastructure, food supply, and security of the 21st century, of 21st century man. And it goes on and on. I mean, think about, when you call information, somebody's answering the phone.
Exactly. There has to be somebody there.
There's somebody that supports virtually every system,
mm-hmm.
however minor it might be, in your daily life, and there wouldn't be people to do these things. And there are little aspects of society that you could pull out a little part, and things will not work right. So, that's a serious possibility. So in any event, we've given you something to think about today. Then, we were thinking in terms of the average person is probably more likely in their lifetime going to experience local catastrophes. There are things like hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, the ice age and asteroids. They could hit, but they're almost... Preparedness that you do in general
mm-hmm.
would help you if you were to survive such a major incident. So the Boy Scout skills that you teach, the outdoor survival skills that I teach, all of these things would help you if you were a survivor. I want to point out that those are natural causes. There's man-made causes, which we probably should be far more concerned about, like economic issues. That's somebody screwing around with the money.
Right. Devaluing the money.
Right, and then there's the war and the effects of war, nuclear war. That's always a possibility.
Yep.
I mean, the fact of the matter is there's civil wars
mm-hmm.
that cause major devastation for certain parts of the world right now as we speak.
Yep.
Okay, if you're not experiencing that, then praise the Lord. That you're not in that situation. Mining and fracking. These can cause major problems in terms of, they do cause certainly local problems, But the fracking can cause will probably cause serious water pollution.
Yeah, they have people opening up their water pipes in certain parts of the country, I think Pennsylvania, and they got natural gas coming out of there.
Really?
Yeah, in addition to the water.
So they're trying to take a bath and that's what they're getting?
Yeah, there's a guy, there's a video, if you go online, type in fracking, and there's guys putting lighters up to their water spigots and there's flames coming out with the water.
I've not seen that.
Yeah, yeah, so the fracking, you mean the deep well or the deep oil drilling?
Well, I would.
And they fill that in with water, right?
Right, right. It's a way to extract oil from certain areas. I would encourage people to look into it.
Yeah.
It seems like it's one of these things that if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. But it's going to cause some major problems if it isn't already.
Yeah.
When the economy is bad, people often will accept things that they would not accept otherwise that will hurt their health or hurt their environment over the long term, because we say we need a job or I'm going to make some money on it. And I would submit to you that that kind of thinking is the antithesis of survival. You should think short term and you should think long term. So in terms of what you teach scouts to think about and in terms of your own life, Francisco, are there any on this list that we've covered that you would feel you might have to deal with, or you may have to use some of your skills to address? Like, I mean, earthquake probably.
Yeah, definitely earthquakes. We teach a merit badge called emergency preparedness.
Emergency preparedness?
Yes, and what that is basically is to put together a plan for your family on how to respond appropriately and be prepared for an emergency like a earthquake, like a fire. So you
have a fire, that's like it affect you personally.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically
forest fire. I mean,
forest fire.
I had to be evacuated 2 years ago from the
right.
forest fire.
I remember
and
that.
A lot of people lost their homes.
Yeah.
So that's the end of their local world for a while.
That's their catastrophe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everything gets burned up or they mm-hmm. have to, you know, choose what's important.
So you teach the scouts to prepare for earthquakes, fires, what else?
Any type of emergency, any kind of evacuation. So the boys have to actually think it through and write a plan out. That's part of the merit badge.
Okay. Well, tell me some of the things that they have to do. Are they trying to have a pack ready to grab or what?
Yes. They have to have a family emergency kit that can be carried out, and that has to have water, basic supplies, you know, water, food, first aid kit, flashlight. And then they have to talk to their families and say, okay, if there is an emergency, where do we meet? Who grabs what? There's a plan, you know.
Right.
And a lot of times people think about this in their mind, but they never actually write down a plan, and they
mm-hmm.
never actually try it out. And they're supposed to try it out. Part of the merit badge is they try it out. When I teach a class, we do an evacuation.
You do a drill.
And then we tell the boys, okay, you'll be in charge of taking this, you'll be in charge of taking that. And then I have them bring their kits with them, and then we all talk about what's in the kit, what's missing in the kit, what was a good thing that they brought. One boy brought a 5-gallon bucket, and actually contained a lot of stuff. And it was easy to carry.
It was easy to carry?
Yep. It was heavy, but it had a nice handle.
Huh.
Okay. And then,
I guess if you're not carrying it too far, I wouldn't think of carrying a 5-gallon bucket.
It had a couple of cans in there for food. It had a lot of water, which I think is more important than the food, actually. It had an axe. It had a flashlight, a radio.
How far did he have to carry this bucket?
If you had to leave your house.
Oh, I see. And if the car was still good, you'd just go to the car.
Right, right, right.
I see. It's just so in this case, it's just a matter of having the stuff that you know you're going to need because you're not going home.
You're going to be displaced for a while.
Yeah.
And it had a bunch of plastic bags. Well, one of them was for trash, and the other bag was for the restroom. And he says you would use the bucket for a restroom.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, we go to the bathroom regularly, so we can't overlook that in an emergency.
Yeah, but it was funny. He was a pretty creative kid. I'm sure his parents helped him, but, you know, that's okay.
So Francisco makes a really good point that wherever you live, whatever your situation is, go through the mental process of what is likely, what's likely to occur.
Yes.
And how do you know that? By the past.
Yep.
We get earthquakes here, so we know they're going to repeat. There's tornadoes in Arkansas and certain states. In Oklahoma, you know they're going to repeat. If you live down along the river, you know there's going to possibly be flooding. You live near a fire zone, you know it happens all the time. Maybe not every year, but...
It happened to me when I was younger. I was in, I think, in junior high. And we hear this police officer down the street. This is in Montebello, where I grew up. And they said, you must evacuate. There's been a chemical spill. Well, there was a train that spilled something. I want to say chlorine or something.
There's a train that goes through your neighborhood?
Yeah, south you know, I would say 2 miles south of where we used to live.
By the way, for those who know Dude McLean, didn't Dude McLean live real close to you?
Back in the 50s, I think.
Yeah. Oh, before you were there.
Actually, not just close to me. He lived on the same street now live on.
Wow. Yeah. Huh.
It's kind of funny.
Hey, dude, did you hear that?
Yeah, Dude McLean.
So Francisco's point is think through what's likely to happen to you and then write a plan. Write a plan for your household. Yes, the plan may not help you if the comet hits your house, but that's irrelevant. That's not our point.
Yeah, and so when we got evacuated, my dad, we just got in the car, we left. My dad grabbed a couple of camping supplies, and we were out for the whole day. We were at a park. We were bored to death.
Was your family or your household in any actual danger?
It was just chemical in the air. It was chemicals in the air, and they wanted to evacuate that neighborhood.
So you would have been in danger if you were breathing that in.
If we stayed there, yeah.
Yeah. How far away did you have to go?
We went about 10 miles away.
To where?
Lake Park.
Okay, so that's South El Monte?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So you drove northeasterly they went to a local park. So
yeah, we were bored. Next time we'll take board games or something or some kind of entertainment.
So you had that was the real life drill, and we encourage people to actually have a drill of if you had to evacuate, because the drill doesn't always go right, even if you prepare for it.
That's how you learn. Yeah.
And believe me, it's not going to go right if it's the real thing, right? I mean, sometimes the fire departments or the various agencies in Southern California here. We'll have a drill for an earthquake day just to see how the agencies communicate and work with each other. And stuff always goes wrong.
True.
And they try to improve upon a basic communication, or there's a piece of equipment that doesn't work, or somebody thought they were supposed to go here and they go there. And believe me, in a real emergency, that can mean the difference between life and death. And it does happen all the time. Bad communications, somebody gets sick, you know, all the things that that can go wrong often do. So the function of a drill is to help you overcome that. Now, I know in the case of your scouts, you have certain emergency preparedness things in general that you prepare them for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that in the household, I would advise people to carry and supply the obvious food and water and so forth, just for any emergency. What are some of the things that you're teaching the scouts?
The canned foods is easy. A lot of the foods, like soup mixes and such.
Is this part of the emergency preparedness badge?
Yes, they have to. Yeah, they have to have some kind of.
We have a black helicopter ahead. Do you hear that? Yeah, it's circling around. They probably honed in on our GPS.
No.
They know who you are. Fortunately, it's leaving. I'm glad you.
Good.
Francisco pushed a few buttons and then they thought we were somewhere else. Thanks for doing that. Okay, going back to the scouts.
Yeah, you basically, we talk about there's necessities and then there's comfort items. And comfort items are definitely necessary.
Such as?
A deck of cards, crossword puzzles.
That's considered comfort?
Coloring pages, yes.
God, I feel painful when somebody wants me to play cards with them. I hate it.
Well,
but I can see for children it would be a good thing.
Yes, and I think because during the emergency, you're doing a lot of sitting and waiting, like what we did back in the 80s, early 80s, when we had to leave our home. We were just sitting at a park, and we had no food. They actually came by and gave us sodas and fruit drinks.
Most of the residents in that area went to that same park?
Yeah, they told us to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they said, if you don't have a place to go, go to Lake Park, blah, blah, blah. And that's where they're going to let us know when to go back. That was before cell phones. That was before internet. It was just police officers that came and fired.
How old were you at the time?
I was in junior high. I was probably 13 years old, maybe 12.
And what year?
I don't know what year that would be. I guess that would be 1984, maybe. 1983.
So that's right. There were computers, but there was no internet or anything.
No.
Cell phones were not ubiquitous at that point either.
No way.
Yeah, so we have a lot of things that we take advantage of today.
Yeah, we just tell them it's important to have the comfort items, but the more important things is just the basic basic first aid supplies and water and food. And I emphasize water, because water, you can do a lot of things with water. You can wash yourself, you can drink water. Your body can not go that long without water. With food, it can go a little longer,
mm-hmm.
You know, three times as long.
Well, in our case, you know, here in Southern California, we do have underground water, but the bulk of the water comes from Northern California or the Colorado River.
Yeah, it gets stolen.
Well, it's stolen fair and square, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Mulholland.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mulholland, right. Hey, folks, go see Chinatown. That's the story of how our water got here.
Yep.
So, water, what about other gear that you might teach the scouts, or for that matter, frame of mind, which is equally important?
Yeah, I mean, we teach do not panic. We have a thing called STOP. I'll go through it real quick.
STOP, S-T-O-P?
S-T-O-P, when you're in a survival situation, regardless of what it is. It could be.
So this is something that you teach the scouts, whether it's a wilderness setting or something that happens in the urban setting.
So the S stands for STOP. Take a deep breath, sit down, relax, okay? Accept it. Accept that you're lost, or accept that you're in danger. Now, the T is to think. Think about what is a possible way to get out of this. What are the important things right now?
So, by the way, you just got through two of them, and yeah. And people who are inclined to panic wouldn't even get that far, right?
Yeah.
To actually stop and just...
And breathe.
Stop, breathe, get control of yourself,
yeah.
And think, you
the
know,
T is
be,
to think.
Be calm, look around, what yeah. is... You know, sometimes people take quick action, and it's adverse. It is not helpful to just start
yep.
rushing around when you don't understand what the situation is.
The next one is observe.
Okay,
you observe what's around you. Assess what you have around you.
This
other
is
people.
Already a big deal for a lot of people. What
yeah.
you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stop,
observe.
Think, observe.
And then, if I need to build a shelter, okay, is there a tree? Okay, there's a tree there. There's branches here. Okay, you got to figure out what you have. See what equipment you have on you. You know, you have your pocket knife in your pocket. You have your fire starter, whatever you have. Okay, P is to make a plan. Now, what am I gonna do? Should we get food first? Should we get water first? Should we build a shelter first?
And in this case, we're talking about the immediate family plan.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something major that affects your whole neighborhood
yeah.
or city, there are others who would be making plans, but you still have to think of what is my plan? How do I,
right.
does my plan fit into it? I mean, you know, the reality is that we are not out of the woods in terms of nuclear exchanges.
Yeah.
If you had a nuclear exchange and a bomb hit anywhere near Montebello, your family would have to go somewhere. Let's
yeah.
say you all survived.
We have Iran building their bombs, and who knows what Russia has. We really don't know. Or what once was Russia. I guess they're individual countries now.
My understanding is that there are many missiles that the U.S. and Russia still have not dismantled. That
yeah,
are still
yeah,
pointing
yeah.
at each other. So
I,
we have
I
a concern there.
I had heard that the missiles are still there, but they took out the nuclear warheads. And it's possible to put the nuclear warheads back in at a moment's notice, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Where'd you hear that, on the internet?
I don't remember.
Yeah, so that just, we could just be spreading a false rumor.
That's a false rumor, yeah, probably. I'm sure it's a false rumor.
You are, huh?
I don't know.
I would like to think that it's true that the nuclear part's not, is gone.
But there's countries that definitely know that the bigger guns that they have, the more powerful they are. So they're starting to build their arsenal.
Stop.
That's what you would do, stop. So you would stop and take a deep breath. You would think. You would observe around you, assess what you have, what equipment you have, what supplies. P is to make a plan and follow the plan and only make adjustments. Like in a family situation, you would assign certain tasks to certain people.
By the way,
you know,
what some people call a plan is mm-hmm. is woefully inadequate.
Right.
Tell me the elements in your mind, just off the top of your head, what you think a serious, useful, meaningful plan would include.
I would say if you have decided you're going to spend the night, you assign a couple people in your family to start building the shelter. You assign another person to start cooking the food. You would assign another person to go and fetch water or fetch food and supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and
okay,
then
so
get
you
a radio, turn on the radio, get information.
Okay, so you are having your details there have to do with assignment of tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing right off the bat, you might list what are the appropriate tasks. The guy in the edge,
mm-hmm.
Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
He was putting people to work, even though he really didn't know where mm-hmm. it was all going.
Exactly. So, he was just reading what he remember what he read in a book.
So I could see that a plan might have a timetable and a schedule
yeah.
because things will change. You have the function where you need to change things and
right.
adapt as necessary. And because a plan can be informal or formal depending
yeah.
on what the situation is and how many people we're dealing with. It may have a map or a drawing
mm-hmm.
because that may be relevant to if you're evacuating or maybe you have to make a new home site. So a plan
yeah.
can be as complicated as it needs to be, but it should serve you, not you serving the plan.
And yeah, exactly. And I think also it helps people to calm down. It gives them something to do instead of sit around and worry and fret.
You're organizing your thinking around
yeah.
a certain
yeah.
focal point. Exactly.
So as a Boy Scout, we're leaders. You know, and what a leader does is he leads. and he thinks and he tries to be rational and to take charge of the situation. Because a lot of times people don't take charge of the situation. They just sit around and watch things happen. And as a Boy Scout, I teach the boys, you gotta do something about it.
You remember,
don't panic, just plan something out and do it.
In the back part of my book, How to Survive Anywhere,
yes.
I'm sure you have a copy and you read
it
each night before you go to bed.
I've read it a couple times. It's very good.
Have you really? Okay. Well, in the rear, I talk about how people respond to emergencies.
The mindset of survival.
And there's the bell curve.
Mm-hmm.
There's about 15% who go crazy and panic
yeah.
in any emergency. There's about 15% who make wise, correct, immediate choices. And then there's about 70% who are just kind of wandering aimlessly. So really, 85% doesn't
yeah.
really do the ideal, doesn't take the ideal action. And
yeah.
we want everyone to, we want that 15% of wise choices to be increased. And how do you get to be part of that 15%? For number one, you're not pretending that these things don't happen.
No, you start preparing, you prepare and you plan. Like
you're
we're
accepting
doing right now,
the inevitability
yeah.
of certain disasters. Not that you're driven by it.
No.
Right? Not that it drives you and you're paranoid and you're fearful and you're looking over your shoulder and
right.
those black helicopters. We just make that up, folks. There was no black helicopter. It was some kind of a helicopter.
It was yellow, I think.
Whatever. But you want to live your life in a positive way, but be realistic and do make some plans
yeah.
and accommodations for some of these things.
Don't expect the government to take care of you. Don't expect someone else to take care of you. Be a little more self-reliant. You know, God gave you a head, use it. Think
mm-hmm.
and plan. So,
besides their STOP acronym, are there other tips that you share with the scouts to move them along the road to self-reliance?
Yeah, I always remind them, don't rely on computers. I work with computers every day and they always break. Rely on your skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Your skills you always take with you.
Okay.
You know, if you're put in the middle of the woods and all you have is your pants and a t-shirt, you still have your skills.
You have no shoes?
You have no shoes. You have to make shoes.
Okay.
So like one of the boys laughed at me one time because I said, let's learn how to sew. And he's like, I don't need to learn how to sew. I said, no, actually you do. It's a good skill.
I've taught sewing classes and so I was like, you guys say, that's women's work. I ain't going to do that.
It's come in handy. It came in handy
yeah.
the other day.
I've made garments. You know, it is a very valuable skill.
It's a skill. Other skills that are important too are having to do with building shelters, identifying natural foods, you know, wild foods, I guess.
So all of these physical skills you should develop.
Yeah.
What about attitude? How do you address that with your scouts? Attitude, mindset? Because I really do, I'm emphasizing that really makes a big deal.
That whole thing, basically it's
the scout oath.
Which is?
A scout is trustworthy, loyal.
No, Francisco is saying a scout is trustworthy.
Yes.
He has to work to become trustworthy. We're not born that way. Children are born greedy and they want
right.
everything. You have to work to become trustworthy.
So I remind them of their oath.
Tell me the oath. Not everybody knows it.
See if I can remember it.
Oh, you see if I can remember. I thought you were Scoutmaster of the Year.
God is trustworthy, loyal, helpful.
Courteous,
kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, and clean and reverent.
Is there some mnemonic device to remember that?
Maybe there is. I just don't know.
I'll have to try to come up with it, just like you came up with the device for my last name.
And I didn't come up with it.
Not your everyday regular guy eating salad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of devices like
yeah.
that.
I think Alan Halcon came with that.
Could be. I thought it was you.
No.
But you should come up with that for the Scout
oath. Yeah. No, we repeat it so many times. It's ingrained. But you know, sometimes the boys need to be reminded to be cheerful. Sometimes the boys need to be reminded to be kind and courteous because they're not normally kind or courteous. Believe me, they're not.
If you've been around 10-year-old boys, you guys know what he's talking about.
Exactly. Even 14-year-old boys, they start bullying a little bit. The
younger
boys. So I remind them who they are and what their position is, and that's a good thing to do because they have taken an oath. They need to do a good turn daily. They need to be prepared.
Do a good turn daily.
Yep.
I like that.
And I always remind them on Tuesday nights, or most of the time, I say, "Today's Tuesday. The day isn't over. Have you done your good turn today? Does that make sense?"
I understand. Yeah. And
we're not deep for the day. Have you done it today?
So I want to thank Francisco again. His accomplishment as Scoutmaster of the Year.
Yeah.
And this was really an interesting and insightful discussion. And I hope everybody takes this advice. This is not just for Boy Scouts.
Yeah, it's for everybody.
These principles apply to everybody, everywhere, at all times, and it helps you make the world a better place. Thank you, Francisco.
Thank you for having me, Christopher.